Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on regarding marriage licenses when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about all of this is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of them. And if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important. It's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It is more binding. It is more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Now, about two-thirds of all marriages here in this country are going to end in divorce. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms of your marriage contract before you marry, and you should write it instead of letting the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and this thing called the marriage contract. Just call us and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's easy to remember, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email when you get there and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, I had a letter from a young lady. I won't read the letter every time I start out, but she asked me in general. She said, can you tell me why a marriage license is not the best idea? And I said, yeah, I know of 32 reasons why I don't have a marriage license. And so last time we started off by analyzing a story here from Pastor Everett Sullivan. And the first reason is that it causes you to lose a number of your constitutional rights as it relates or regards your children. So here in the second installment of this subject matter regarding marriage licenses, let's take a look at the students section from Common Law Marriage in Tennessee. Remember I said there's three kinds of marriage here. You got the civil law marriage with a license. Now we have a common law marriage. And here's the definition, and here's the way this common law marriage works. Marriage, in general, has been defined by the Tennessee Supreme Court as follows. It, marriage, is something more than a contract. It is rather to be deemed an institute of society. The marriage is founded upon the consent and the contract of the parties. And in this view, it has some peculiarities in its nature, character, operation, and the extent of obligation different from what belong to ordinary contracts. Unlike other contracts, it is indissoluble between the parties. When consummated according to law, it is of perpetual obligation, and it cannot be renounced at the will of either or both parties. It continues to exist until a dissolution is pronounced, either by the death of one of the parties or by a divorce. The rights and duties growing out of marriage are not left to the option or the agreement of the parties, but to some extent are matters of municipal regulation, over which the will of the parties can have no control. It is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order and morality, and it constitutes the chief cornerstone of the whole structure of civilized society. Unquote. Now let's dissect that one for a moment. The young lady that wrote us the letter's name is Kim. She wants to marry a young man by the name of Nate, and her parents are adamantly opposed to her marrying Nate without a marriage license. So I said, let's take a look at what this marriage license is. Now here's a quotation from the Supreme Court of Tennessee, and they tell us quite a bit about this thing of marriage. All right, now let's dissect it. Listen to this. It, marriage, is something more than a contract. So marriage is a contract, and a contract is the prerequisite to business. Marriage is a business. We're going to create a business. And Kim and Nate are going to start a family business called marriage. Well, it is rather to be deemed an institute of society. Excuse me here. Did society come up with the idea of marriage, or was that something that was ordained back at the Garden of Eden? Now, I don't want to be a spoil sport here and rain on your parade, but I dissent from the concept that marriage was an organization, or marriage is an idea that came from the legislature, or it comes from society. It comes from the creator of the universe. That's where marriage comes from. Like it or lump it, that's where it comes from. Now, we've come along and we have made some alterations, you know, like gay marriage. You didn't get that from the creator of the universe. You got that from the legislature of Vermont and the legislature of Massachusetts and the legislature of Iowa. You didn't get that from Genesis 1. 2, 3, or Deuteronomy, or Numbers, or Exodus. Come on. That's not an institute of society. It's an institution created by the creator of the universe. But the Tennessee Supreme Court says it is rather to be deemed an institute of society. What? The marriage license. Civil law marriage is an institution of society. Doesn't come from the creator of the universe. Marriage comes from the Creator. We came along because we're smarter than God. People with marriage licenses are obviously smarter than God. We've come along here, come a long way, baby. We're gonna change some things here. All right. It's founded upon the consent and contract of the parties. And in this view, it has some peculiarities in its nature, character, operation, and extent of obligation, different from what belong to ordinary contracts. All right, so this marriage contract that you're going to enter into, Kim, with Nate, is an extraordinary contract. Well, gee, Kim, don't you think you ought to know something about the terms and conditions of this extraordinary contract? This isn't an ordinary contract like, you know, a promissory note at the bank or an auto loan. This is something extraordinary. We learned that last time. Do you remember Senator Pfeiffer? And he says, hey, lady, don't you know that a marriage license is a privilege from the state, that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? All right, so let's wake up and smell the coffee, because a lot of times people call here crying and they say, the state's taken my little child. That's horse pucky. You people out there don't own any children. The state owns your child, Kim. So, you know, you want to get a marriage license, that's fine. But when social lady comes along with the cops and says, hey, we don't like the way you're educating this kid. We don't like the way you're disciplining this kid. We don't like the way you're medically treating this child over here. So we're going to take him and put him in foster care. What you do is shut up and say, yes, ma'am. I've been a bad babysitter, and you should take this child. And what we do when we get a birth certificate, we pass our seed through the fire to Moloch in violation of Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. God told you don't do that. Well, you know, hey, Kim, we're smarter than God. So we're going to get birth certificates and marriage licenses. We're going to go out here and cut a fat hog in the back. Okay, but then there's some, you know, there's some side effects that come from this. You know, it's like taking drugs. I always worry, well, there's some side effects, you know, like chronic diarrhea and sometimes blindness. And, you know, Viagra's great stuff. Sometimes it makes you go blind. I'm not sitting here telling you not to take Viagra, but, you know, is there some other way other than Viagra? I mean, come on. Unlike other contracts, it is indissoluble between the parties. So now when you get this marriage license and you marry with this marriage license and you and Nate wake up one day and you say, hey, Nate, I think I'd like to divorce you. You can't do that. Kim, you can't divorce Nate. Why? Well, because you got a marriage license. It's indissoluble between the parties. Okay? All right. Now, if I want to divorce my wife this morning before breakfast, I can do that. I can write her up a bill of divorce, put it in her hand, and we're divorced. I can do that. My wife can do that. And my wife and I, you know, we thought that was a pretty good plan. We didn't think that going to the state of Missouri to get a divorce was all that good a deal. We thought, well, hell, you know, if we're smart enough and adult enough that we can marry, maybe we'd be smart enough and adult enough that we could divorce. And so we just cut the state out. Now, I'm not telling you to cut the state out. If you want to cut the state into the deal, that's fine. But you need to understand that when you cut the state into the deal, well, then that's the modality that we're going to function on. And then there's constitutional rights that you lose, and then there's the property right in the child that you lose, and then there's more than that. There's the property rights concerning the snow machine and the house and the 401k and the dog and everything else. And those property settlements are going to be made by a judge. It's going to be made by some third party. And typically, when the judge makes the property decision and the custody decisions and so on, he's not asking you, Kim. He's not asking Nate. He's not going to ask your mother and father what they think about the division of the custody of the children or the dog or the mortgage on the house. He's going to do it arbitrarily and oftentimes capriciously, at least in your view, when it happens. And your duty is to sit down, shut up, and do what you're told, because that's what you're contracting for. People with marriage licenses are incompetent. They're unable to manage their own marital affairs. And that's why they need a guardian called the state to come in and regulate these things. Tell you when to come in. Tell you when to go out. Tell you when to stand up. Tell you when to sit down. And what to do in between. It's kind of like joining the army. You know, people that can't regulate their lives join the army and somebody tells them when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. Works out like a shot for all those people that cannot, for themselves, regulate their own lives. Marriage licenses accomplish the same goal. So, unlike other contracts, it's indissoluble between the parties, and when consummated according to law, that's the penetration part, it is of perpetual obligation, and it cannot be renounced at the will of either or both parties. So you and Nate can agree to a divorce, but you can't have it without the consent of the third party to the agreement, called the state. And I'm sitting here asking the question, excuse me, do I really want some nameless, faceless bureaucrat making these decisions for me? And my conclusion was, no, I don't. And my wife's decision was, no, I don't. Now, I know my wife is just a girl, but, you know, my girl is a pretty smart lady. And she can go to the grocery store all by herself. My wife is a very smart woman. She can go to the grocery store all by herself. She can count out and make change without even taking off her shoes to count with. Isn't that amazing? I say that's a hell of a stunt for just a girl. Now, I like to throw that out every once in a while because, you know, in our society here in the United States, Christian America, women are looked upon as being stupid. Women aren't very smart. And they have to have husbands, you know, to guide them and direct them through life. And without that, you know, the poor souls, you know, they wouldn't be able to function. And, you know, there are some women out there that can actually function. They can count, read, and write, you know, think. Hell, some of them even make lawyers and judges. It continues to exist, this is the marriage, it continues to exist until a dissolution is pronounced, either by the death of one of the parties or by a divorce. The rights and duties growing out of marriage are not left to the option or agreement of the parties. Kim, wake up here. The rights and duties growing out of this marriage contract between you, Nate, and the state are not left to the option or agreement of you and Nate, but to some extent are matters of municipal regulation, state regulation, over which the will of the parties can have no control. Underline the word no control. That's probably the right course of action for most women who can't think, can't count, can't read, can't write, and need a guardian. Kim, maybe you're one of those. I don't know. If you're incompetent and you can't think, read, write, and function, maybe you do need a guardian called the state to regulate your marriage. But I married a pretty smart girl, and my wife can read and write, and she can count all by herself. She can think, function in life. And she and I together sat down and said, do we really need this? Do we really need some social lady over here? Do we need a judge? Do we need government agents over here, nameless, faceless bureaucrats, to direct and guide us and tell us how to come in and go out and what we ought to do in between? And our conclusion was, no, we don't. We don't want that. And that's why I said in our first go-around here, I said, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you should not get a marriage license. Because I don't know you. I don't know how competent you are. I don't know what your goals are in life. I don't know what you want to accomplish. But marriage is a business, and if it's a business, and my wife and I have a business, a marriage business, and she's a pretty competent lady, and you know, once in a while we have disagreements over business and policy matters. So we kind of sit down and argue it out and talk about it and, you know, come to a conclusion. And so far, we've been able to do this without any state interference at all. We have not needed to have any government agents come in here and direct and operate our business, educate our children, or anything else. We've been able to do all of that all by ourselves. Now, maybe we're unusual and unique people, but then, hell, Kim, maybe you and Nate are unusual and competent people, and you could do this without any outside guidance and control. You know, mull it over, think about it. The rights and duties growing out of it are not left to the option or agreement of the parties, but to some extent are matters of municipal regulation over which the will of the parties can have no control. It is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order. You could read socialist order. Marriage licenses are the foundation of socialist order. Well, hell, I'm not opposed to socialism. I don't want to buy it. I don't want to participate in socialism. But I wouldn't tell the socialists out there that they should not participate and that they should not practice socialism. Hell, I don't know what's good for them. And evidently, they think that they know what's good for them and they need socialism. Now, socialism is government control. See? Government controls the banks. Government controls business. Government controls their daily actions. It governs their schools and everything. Well, hell, maybe that's what they need. I'm one of those that doesn't need that. My wife is one of those that doesn't need that. And so our conclusion is that we'd go ahead with a patriarchal marriage under the tutelage of the Ten Commandment model, and it's worked well for us. Now, it requires responsibility. It requires specific performance on the terms and conditions of the contract. And we're willing to do that, and we're willing to be competent and capable people that have certain duties, obligations, and responsibilities, and we can meet all of our duties, obligations, and responsibilities. Now, there are some people out there that can't do that. There are people out there that cannot educate their children, and they need a government to do it for them. There are people out there that cannot support their wives and their children, and they need aid to families with dependent children and food stamps and welfare and a social safety net. You know, and I don't deny that. And I think that those people probably do need a marriage license. They probably do need social aid. They need unemployment insurance and workman's compensation and old age and survivor's benefits. But my wife and I are a couple of people that don't need that. And we would like to exercise a little more control, a little more freedom, a little more independence in determining our children's education, our children's future, and our business future, and so on. We wanted to decide that for ourselves, without social aid and without government bureaucracy directing us and telling us when to get up in the morning. Sometimes we want to sleep till noon. And we didn't want somebody to tell us when to go to work and when to punch the time clock and so on. And so, you know, we do that ourselves. I know it's a wild new concept, but tuck it away in your heart. Now, they say this is the social order and morality. Morality? Excuse me. Hang on a second here. Kim. The government, this is the United States of America, went out to Nevada, and there's a whorehouse out there which is called the Mustang Ranch. Mustang Ranch. I'm not one of their patrons, but I happen to know where the whorehouse is located, north of Reno. Well, they didn't make their tax payments, and so the United States of America, through the Internal Revenue Service, went out to Mustang Ranch, seized it, and then they operated a whorehouse for 16 months until they found a buyer for it, and then they sold it. Now, when the Supreme Court of Tennessee comes to me and they say to me that the government is the foundation for all social order and morality, honest to God, do you believe that an institution that runs a whorehouse is the place that you need to go to learn morality? Hell, I don't know, Kim. Maybe you do need the government to teach you morality. But I don't. And I'm not going to learn morality from some guy that's running a whorehouse called the Internal Revenue Service. Now, this same government's performing, I think it's 2.3 million abortions a year. And they call that morality. My God, I don't know where the hell where our heads are here. I think this nation's gone absolutely berserk. We're mad here. For the rest of you people out in the world, this is the United States of America. Our government runs a whorehouse, performs 2.3 million abortions a year, and they tell us that they are the foundations for morality. Hell, the Pope can direct morality better than that, for crying out loud. No, my wife and I, we took a look at that and said, no, we're not going to buy into that morality crap. No, we're not buying that. But I'm not sitting here telling the rest of you people out there that morality shouldn't come from the Internal Revenue Service operating Mustang Ranch or government funding abortion. I don't know. Well, maybe that to you, that's I got a daughter like that. My daughter told me one time, she said, an abortion is just the excision or excising of unwanted tissue. That was, my daughter went to college. She got letters after her name. That girl's smarter than I am, smarter than God. And, you know, I don't deny that. I never said I was very, very, very bright, but I'm not going to buy into that kind of crap. And this is the kind of thing that we get from the Supreme Court of Tennessee, and, you know, fine. You know, that's what you want to buy. So wake up, you know, and make up your mind. Is that what you want to buy into? Now, on another occasion, our Supreme Court, speaking of a common law marriage, had this to say. All right, now, remember I said there's three kinds of marriage. We got the civil law marriage. That's number one. That's the most popular and the most well-known. The second marriage is called common law marriage. It's not very well-known, and it's not very common. But here it is in the law book, and here's the student section of Common Law Marriage in Tennessee, published back in 1945. So I'll just read it to you. No particular form was required to be observed by the parties entering into it. It's a simple agreement by a man and woman that they would live together as man and wife, and it constitutes a valid marriage. Common law marriage, a valid marriage. It doesn't have a marriage license, and it excludes the state. This is a contract between the boy and the girl. Now remember, the civil law marriage with the marriage license is a three-party contract, limited general partnership, between the boy, the girl, and the state. Now, common law marriage is a contract between the boy and the girl. I don't have a common law marriage. I've got a patriarchal marriage. That's the third form. We're coming to that. See? So, what I want to do is I want to show you there's common law marriage. Now, let's take a look at civil law marriage number one. Let's take a look at common law marriage number two. Then we'll take a look at patriarchal marriage. And then why don't you and Nate sit down and discuss it and say, well, you know, what do you think we want to do here? Did we want to follow the biblical model? Do we want to follow the common law model? Or do we want to follow the civil law model? You know, there's your choice. You got three choices. If there's a fourth, fifth, or sixth kind of marriage, you're asking the wrong guy, because I don't know what those are. I could only find three. I know what those three are. Those I can tell you about. This common law form, which existed in England and in some of the states in the early development of our nation, due to the vast space, difficult traveling facilities, and scarcity of squires, has now been abrogated in many states today, including Tennessee, by statute. So Tennessee abrogates common law marriage by statute. They won't recognize it. You can't do it there. Okay? Now, the statutes dealing with this subject, according to Vernier, fall into five classes. Class number one are those that specifically validate common law marriages. Two, those that set out laws requiring a definite procedure to be followed to be married, but saying nothing about common law marriages. Three, those that specifically declare common law marriages invalid. Four, those that say some technicality in the performance of the requirements will not invalidate the marriage. And five, those that have been construed by the courts to be mandatory, thereby invalidating such marriages. Tennessee is placed in this last category by all of the authorities. Our statutes require that a license must issue from the county in which the female resides or where the marriage is solemnized. The parties must declare in the presence of a minister or officer that they accept each other as man and wife. The parties must be of a certain age. A recital of the performance of the ceremony must be endorsed on the back of the license, and the license must be returned to the county of origin. All right. Now, patriarchal and common law marriages have a lot in common, and they're very similar. A civil law marriage requires a license. It requires permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. And so the question that I asked last time, what is it about marriage for which we might need a license? And the answer is interracial marriage. Interracial marriage. The only law in the scripture, well, there's actually two. But the basic law in the scripture is you cannot marry outside of your race. That's number one. Black boys cannot marry white girls. It violates the law of God. Okay? That's about as plain as you can get. There's also a lot of sub-contacts here that we ought to consider, but that's basically it. Orientals and blacks and whites are three races, and they cannot intermarry. Orientals need to marry Orientals. Chinese can marry Japanese, but they won't. Japanese will not marry Koreans. they could. God doesn't have any problem with you Oriental people marrying other Orientals. He just has a problem with Orientals marrying blacks or whites. He just has a problem with whites marrying Orientals and vice versa and so on. So that's why we need a license. A license is permission to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. So when you go down to get a marriage license, what you're saying is, I need a license because I want to marry outside of my race. And so as a result of that, they would get a license, but then only 1% of people actually do that. Well, here in the United States, 1% of marriages are interracial. All right, now, there's one other prohibition. In Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 1 through 4, is a divorce statute. Now, once you're divorced, you can remarry. Now, let's suppose, Kim, that you divorce Nate, and you go out and you remarry, and let's call him Tom. And you're married to Tom for a while, but Tom gets killed in a car wreck. And now you're single again, and Nate has never remarried, but you remarried. But Tom got killed. And so now you decide, you and Nate get together, and you decide, well, why don't we remarry? Okay, that's specifically prohibited. It's an odd event. It doesn't occur very often, and that would be a pretty odd event, but it could happen. And if that happened, there is a specific statute. It's Deuteronomy 24, verse 4. It says, don't do that. Once a married woman is divorced or her husband dies, she can never go back to a former mate. You cannot go back and remarry Nate. You can do like Elizabeth Taylor, and you can go marry 6 different men or 16 different men. No problem with that. But you can never go back and remarry any of those men that you had married in the past. You cannot have sexual relations with any former male. That's where venereal disease comes from. Want to know how it got started? Well, that's how it did. All right, so those are the two prohibitions. All right, now, other than those two prohibitions, there aren't any other laws concerning marriage. Well, none that I know of in the scripture that I've seen. Now, the state has a lot of laws concerning marriage, and this is one of the things that bothers me. See, once you've married with a marriage license, there's a 3-party limited general partnership. Now, the state is a sovereign power, and they make laws, and they can make laws any day of the week. So, let's just test this one out. Your mom and dad now have a marriage license, and they've been married for 30 years. The state could come along in the morning and enact a law that affects your mother and father and never informed them of it. And your mother and father now totally oblivious to this new law that's been enacted could violate that law and then be prosecuted for that violation without ever having any notice. And it's called strict liability. Strict liability. Well, you should know that law. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. And I didn't want to get entangled in that. I didn't want to make a contract with somebody that can change the terms and conditions of the contract without notice to me. And that's the power that the state has. And my wife and I looked at that and said, you know, we don't think we want to contract with people like that. Now, most people do. And then they're totally surprised when the police knock on their door and snatch their kids. They're just absolutely dumbfounded when that happens. They shouldn't be. They agreed to it when they got the marriage license. There are hundreds and thousands of statutes on the books that you people don't read and couldn't find. I mean, here's this lady, Kim, writes me a letter, and she said about looking for this, she said, now, we would also like for you to know that we've attempted to research this very extensively, but we have not had much success, and therefore we're turning to you as a last resort. So that tells me that Kim and Nate do not have the legal expertise to do legal research. So therefore, you don't know what the laws of your state are. Well, excuse me, but hasn't anybody ever told you that when you enter into a contract, that you should read it first, you should take it to a lawyer and have him explain it to you before you sign it? And yet here you are, you go out and you get a marriage license and you sign up for this thing. And there's a clause in there that says, we can alter, reform, change, or amend this contract at any time without any notice to you whatsoever. This is called state sovereignty. And you'll be bound to it, even if you're ignorant and don't know anything about it. And these people are totally ignorant, don't have any idea as to whose children these are. And then when the social lady comes with the police, take their children away, they cry and they call me on the phone and they rant and rave and jump up and down and say they can't do that and one thing and another. I always ask them, do you have a state marriage license? Yeah. Oh, yeah, the state can do that. Yep, the state can do that, all right. Hey, listen, it's a halfway point here. I got to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. And finally, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org. And our phone is 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about regarding marriage licenses, answering the questions that many of you have concerning the marriage license and should I have one. Here's another reason. Here's an affidavit. It's actually an asseveration signed by, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 witnesses. Okay? 18 witnesses. And we've got their addresses, names and addresses on a document. Oh, I'll take that back. It is signed by a notary. Yep. And dated 6/27/89. Now listen to this. We, the undersigned, do hereby affirm that we're knowledgeable and able to testify to the following facts. On Monday, May 19th, 1986, this question was put to Mr. Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of the State of Texas. Quote, is it true that the State of Texas owns our children? Unquote. Maddox responded, quote, yes, it's true. And not only your children, but you too. Unquote. This exchange took place in the Attorney General's office parking area at approximately 5:30 p.m. The affiance hereby affirm that the foregoing is a true and accurate report. Further affiance saith not. And there's their signature on there, 18 of them. Okay. Once you get a marriage license, there's a second document that comes into play here called the birth certificate. Now, when you get the marriage license and you have a baby, at that instant in time, the state has a 1/3 interest in the child. You know, just picture it this way. Kim, you, Kim, and Nate, and George Gordon buy an apartment house. George Gordon has a 1/3 interest in the apartment house. Then George Gordon comes to you and Nate and says, now I'd like you to sign over all of your right title and interest in the apartment house to me. And let's suppose you do that. You're still living in the apartment house. But now I own the apartment house. Okay? Because you gave it to me. That's what a birth certificate is. See, I only had a 1/3 interest in the apartment house until you gave me your interest in the apartment house. And so when the baby's born, I've got a 1/3 interest, and you and your husband have a 1/3 interest until you sign it over to me. And when you sign it over to me, now I, the state of Texas, own 100% of the child. But I don't want the kid. I don't want to put braces on his teeth and change his diapers and all that. I'm going to let you do all of that. You can have all the work. I just want the kid when he's 18 so I can put him in the army so I got cannon fodder to send to Afghanistan. That's what I want the kid for. I want this kid to go to college so that I can turn out a money tree. That's what all of you college kids are. You're trained money trees. And you go out into the society and you collect the money from all of the people out there and then you pay it over to the government. It's easier to collect it from doctors than it is to collect it from 100 patients. So the doctor is the central point that the patients deliver their money to, and then the state taxes the doctor and takes the money from the people. That's the way that game's played. Okay, here's a notification from the county of Shasta, the health services agency of the Department of Public Health. And it's signed by a lady by the name of Linda L. Allen, who is the Deputy Registrar of Vital Statistics. It's dated August 6, 1985. And it's addressed to Ms. Nancy Robinson. I guess it's old enough I can just read it to you. It says, Dear Ms. Robinson, as I understand it, you gave birth to twin girls on July 30, 1985 at Mercy Medical Center in Redding, California, and I also understand from the hospital staff that you did not desire to register the birth of your girls with them at this time. So I'm writing to inform you of information that you may be unaware of. According to state regulations, if you do not register your daughter's birth within the first year of their delivery, they would then have to be registered on a delayed registration of birth form, and the cost would be, at this time, $15. Considering the fact that you delivered in a hospital and had a physician in attendance, this would probably be of no consequence or trouble for you now, but in later years, this may be a problem for your daughters. Now, I'm sure that you are aware of the utmost importance in having a birth certificate as soon as possible. Let me pause right there. Can you people out there in Radio Land come up with one reason why you should have a birth certificate as soon as possible? Come on now, put your thinking caps on. Why should you have a birth certificate? Well, obviously, without one, you haven't been born. You're not alive. You can't live until you've had a birth certificate. Who issued the first birth certificate? Did Adam and Eve have a birth certificate? Did Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob have birth certificates? And if so, who issued them? What are they for? What do you need them for? And what about people that don't have them? Is there some liability that comes if you don't have a birth certificate? There are some children out there that don't have birth certificates. What are the ramifications to those children? All right, listen up. Now consider the fact that in order to be registered for school or to apply for a marriage license or grants or scholarships in school, the state of California requires a certified copy of a birth certificate. The federal government requires a certified copy of a birth certificate when applying for military service, passports, or a Social Security card. Now, all you draft dodgers out there, all you young men that want to avoid the draft, do you know that you could not go into the military without a birth certificate? Huh? Did you know that? Did you know that you can't get into public school without a birth certificate? Can't get a passport without a birth certificate. All the things that you don't want, can't, you shouldn't have, and don't need, you got to have a birth certificate for. If you want to be a part of the civil law state, you need a birth certificate. Well, my wife and I took a look at that and said, do we really want to be a part of the civil law state? I mean, kind of a wild new concept and idea. I'm not telling you you shouldn't. I'm just sitting here asking you the question, are you really sure you want to? Because, you know, members of the civil law state have to pay taxes. Now, if you want to pay the taxes and get the benefits, now, let's try it this way. I don't have a Social Security number, and I can't get Social Security benefits. But I don't have to pay Social Security taxes. So I looked at that years ago, and here's the conclusion I came to. If I join Social Security, based upon my years of service in the Social Security system from 1950 to the year 2000 and what was it, 2004, I guess it was, something like that, when I turned 62 or 65, I would have paid in $153,000. And I could have drawn out $805 a month for 120 months. That's the average lifespan. So let's take 805 times 120, and that was $96,600. So after paying in $153,000, I could get back $96,000. That means I had to pay somebody $57,000 to write me 120 checks. And I looked at that and I said, I don't think I need to pay. That's, how much is that? $57,000 divided by 120 is $475 a check. I didn't think I needed to pay somebody $475 to write me a check for $805. Now, I wouldn't say that most of you people out there don't need that service. In fact, I think most of you people probably do need that service. But there are some of us that don't, and I'm one of those. And so I dropped out of Social Security many years ago, and I took all of that money, and I did something else with it. I burned airplane gas and chased wild women at Mustang Ranch and just, you know, squandered it all. And now I'm 70 years old and I can't draw my Social Security. And I'm here to tell you that I wouldn't get out of bed for $805 a month. I wouldn't get out of bed for chicken feed like this. Now put that in your pipe and smoke it. And I don't think that anybody else with a half a brain needs to do that. Now, for you rich people out there, all you lawyers that went to the Harvard Law School, you haven't done your arithmetic here, so I'm going to do it for you. You people are in the top 5% of income earners in the country. All you doctors, dentists, and lawyers, and real estate brokers, come on. All you people out there making $100,000 a year or more, top 5%. Now, how much Social Security tax are you paying? 15.3%. Or about $15,000 a year, you know, in round numbers. I'll round it off for you. Now, take $15,000 a year. Now, when did you graduate from college, Doc? You were about 22, 23, 25 years old, you know? And you're going to pay into this thing for about 40 years, aren't you? Now, take $15,000 a year, and this times 40. That's $600,000. You're going to pay in, Doc, $600,000. It's $500,000. $500,000 you're going to pay into this thing. What are you going to get back? You're going to get back $1,200 a month. Call Social Security today and ask them, if I retired in the morning, how much are my maximum benefits if I pay in the maximum tax? $1,200 a month. How long are you going to live, Doc, from age 65? The answer is until you're 75, 120 months. Now, you paid in $500,000. I'll be real conservative here. $500,000, divide that by 120 months, and that's $4,166 a month that you're paying to get that check. You're paying, Doc, $4,000 to have somebody write you a check for $1,200. Huh? And you people out there tell me that you're educated? It's okay now, because I was 37 before I could count. And by God, I haven't found very many people here in America that can count either. Now, getting back to you, Kim and Nate, are you people capable and able to count? Are you able to read and write and come to conclusions of and by yourself? Just start doing the numbers. Just start asking these questions. Just start listening to what I'm telling you here. Now, I teach a school on this. And if you want to get the details and the documentation, I've got hundreds of pages of documentation here. I am not going to copy all of this and send it to you. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to take that kind of time, effort, and energy. If you want to learn, that's what this law school is all about. I teach this day in and day out, and I put it down, and I'll sell it to you. I'll make sure that you get it, and I'll explain it to you, and you can ask questions. And I'm going to take the time here to tell you the answer over the air. But now, listen to this. This is computer aid to investigations. Child neglect abuse cases are affected. Listen to this one little paragraph right here. The changes are part of the Department of Health and Rehabilitative Services Protective Services Initiative. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Let me read that to you again. These changes are part of the Department of Health and Rehabilitative Services Protective Services Initiative. It is an attempt to improve their credibility and better protect the state's children. To better protect the state's children. This was a news press release Monday, June 6, 1988, dealing with child neglect abuse cases affected. Hey, listen, when there's abuse of a child, it's the state's child. I would be real concerned about abuse to my child. I'm really not too concerned about abuse to your kid. Now, let me tell you a little story here about Joe. I had a student in here one time, a very, very sharp guy, went through about three or four schools here, as I recall, contractor from Virginia, and he had a little girl about 8 years old. And so he went through the program here, rescinded his marriage license and birth certificates and social security numbers and so on. And after he got his rescissions done, he moved from Virginia and he went to Coffeyville, Kansas. Now, he's got this little girl. Time goes by. And he's got this little girl. She's 8 years old. And his wife and he decided that they wanted to homeschool this child in Kansas. And so they did. And one day, social lady comes out, knocks on the door. They're living on a farm now. They're living on 40 acres out here in the countryside. Social lady comes out, knocks on the door, and says, "Hey, how come your kid ain't in public school?" And Joe told her, says, "Well, we're educating her here at home." And so there's some rules and regulations in Kansas, and whether Joe was in compliance with all of them, I don't know about that. But so anyway, Joe had to go down to the school board and talk to him about this kid. So he went down to the school board, and the school officials, now they've got a scam going here. See, they call this free education for all children in public school. That's a misnomer. See, here in the United States of America, it costs $56 a day to educate a kid in public school. That's the average, $56 a day. So every day a kid's not in school, the school is losing $56 a day. That's why they want the kid in school. It doesn't have anything to do with educating the kid. Hell, we graduate 3 million high school seniors every year that are functionally illiterate in this country. Hell, they can't even read their diploma, for crying out loud. And we call them educated. Costs $56 a day to turn out a functionally illiterate kid that can't read his diploma. Boys and girls, that's why I'm telling you, here in America, we've gone stark raving mad. You don't need to spend $56 a day to turn out a fool. You can spend absolutely nothing and turn out somebody that's stupid. In this country, we spend $56 a day, $10,000 a year to turn out these fools. That's not done accidentally. Hell, that's done on purpose. And that's what we call the education scam. So anyway, Joe Fillmore, he's got a little girl, and he says, hell, I want to educate this kid. I want my kid to be able to read and write. He's educating her at home. And so they said, well, you got to do this, that, and another thing. And so Joe said, no, I don't think I want to do that. And so he said, if you don't like it, we'll litigate. Well, now, when the school board has to litigate with a lawyer, they don't want to do that. So they backed off. Well, some years went by, and one day old Joe calls me on the telephone. He says, well, my wife and I want to send our kid to public school. So they went down to the public school and said, hey, we want to educate our child here in the public school. And they said, well, where's this kid's birth certificate? Where's this kid's shot record? And Joe said, well, we don't have a birth certificate, and we don't have a marriage license, and we don't have a shot record. My little girl has never had any vaccinations. And they said, well, we're not going to let your little kid into school. You got to go get a birth certificate. You got to go get shots. Makes all the sense in the world. See, the state of Kansas is not going to educate Joe's little girl. The state of Kansas only educates the state of Kansas children. Hell, that makes all the sense in the world. My name is George Gordon, and I educated all of the Gordon kids. I didn't educate any of the Mitchell or Johnson kids. I'm not here to educate Johnson and Mitchell kids. I'm just here to educate Gordon kids. And the state of Kansas is just there to educate Kansas kids. They're not going to educate Missouri kids or Joe Fillmore kids or George Gordon kids. Okay? That's why you have to pass your seed through the fire to Moloch in violation of Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5, get a birth certificate with the marriage license to pass title of the child to the state. That's why Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of Texas, said, yeah, we own your child, and we own you too. All right, now, I don't know if you want the state to own you and own your child. Most people do. But my wife and I were a little different, and Joe was a little different, and he said, no, I don't want that. I don't want to do that. And so this is another decision that you have to make. Can I say, Kim, there's 32 reasons why I don't want a marriage license. I don't want Social Security. I don't want vaccinations for my child. I don't want to participate in the census. There's a lot of things that I don't want to do. And if I'm involved in citizenship, in the civil law society, then I have to do those things. And so these are choices and decisions that you have to make. And most people say, well, of course we want to do that. We're Americans. Okay. That's what they say in France and Germany. Of course we want to do that. We're Germans. Of course we want to do that. We're French. You know, okay, fine. But then don't complain when the state comes along and says, okay, by the way, let's inform you of these laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices, and the duties and the taxes that you owe to support all this. You know, then sit down, shut up, and fold your hands. So simple, isn't it? Hey, I'm out of time again, so we're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And we'll be back with more on this thing of regarding marriage licenses next time. Let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour, and thank you very much for listening. And that's our signal. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you next time. So until then, good night, friends.